If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hello and welcome to From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios. It is the weekend and we are winding down to the last few hours, last few innings for the Braves this weekend, and some might say mercifully so. It has been anything but the ideal homecoming for this team. It felt like maybe the Braves finally had a little momentum behind them. Maybe they were starting to play a little bit better, and look, maybe they will going forward. But this weekend was kind of a rude awakening. Wake-up call, reminder, whatever you would like to dub it as, that the Braves still have some work to do, and they have very much yet to figure out the riddle that is the Los Angeles Dodgers, who continue to have their number. We're going to talk about that, obviously, a lot on the show. These two teams meet for Sunday Night Baseball. Then the Braves' homestand will continue with four games against the Cincinnati Reds. So a lot to unpack, I guess, as the Braves come home. We were hoping that some of it would be good. And from the road trip, look, it was. When last we spoke, you know, a week ago, Atlanta was taking care of the business it needed to be taken care of to try to hopefully climb back to 500. But that did not happen, and that was just one of a handful of disappointments over the past few days that, if we're being honest, and I think most fans are brutally honest at times about it, may have erased a lot of the goodwill that the Braves have been building up coming in, because you just want to see the team send that reminder, that message, that, you know, shot over the bow to baseball that, hey, look, we're back. We are a force to be reckoned with. We're going to continue to play better. And maybe this team will get even better once it becomes a full-strength operation. I mean, that's something that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But I think that one of the things I try to do, I think this anyway, I'd like to say I feel this, I'd like to say that people can hear it, is at least help you hedge your bets a little bit. Maybe temper your expectations for it, because I can tell you all the things that could go right that could make the Braves a very good team. It makes them one of the best teams in baseball when things are clicking. But I also feel like it's my responsibility to point out, and many people have already seen this, that many things are not clicking, and they're going to have to change if the Braves want to ascend to those heights and accomplish the things that they very much like to do, the things they set out to do when they reported to spring training nearly, 2 months ago now. So time is flying. And before we know it, it'll be Memorial Day. That's only, about 3-plus weeks away? Maybe a little bit less. I have to look at it on the exact calendar. But we're already in the first week of May is the takeaway here. And I think Memorial Day is kind of that first real checkpoint where you can say, all right, we've played enough games to know maybe what we are right now, and maybe more importantly, what we're not. And I think that the Braves have had to answer that last question more than they would like to thus far. We're going to get into all of that, of course, on this edition of From the Diamond. Before I get too much further, though, I want to remind you, as always, you can follow me on social media if you dare. Take the challenge. It's at Grant McCauley on X. You can also find me on Instagram by that same handle. You can find the show on Facebook. Just search for From the Diamond. You can also find it on Instagram and on X, though the X is more or less just to kind of let you know who's going to be on the show, what's going on, and where to get the podcast, which is available wherever you get your podcast. You can also find every episode of From the Diamond right here on 92.9 The Game on Sundays, typically 5 to 7 p.m., and on the Odyssey app. It's very, very handy. You can jump right in there, get all the great stuff on the 92.9 The Game lineup, which, by the way, got a new leadoff hitter, part of the morning shift. Things are going well in the McCauley household. So some good stuff's going on. Look, there's a lot happening in Atlanta sports. There's a lot happening for the Atlanta Braves, but there are a lot of things ahead of us to accomplish. Let me bring all of that to a head. And I think that the Braves thus far have been able to find some of the answers, but it brings up more questions. It's the old Rowdy Roddy Piper, I like to call it. Just when you think you got all the answers, I change the questions. And that seems to kind of be what's happened from 2024 to 2025 for the Braves. And why do I say that? Besides being able to make a wrestling reference on a baseball show. Well, because last year, the answer to the Braves' questions was, hey, good pitching could keep you in this. The year before, it was, hey, good hitting could drive you. And it did. And now this year, I feel like they haven't gotten enough good pitching to, you know, sustain them on a run that they would like to go on. Maybe it'll be in the offing, but the early returns, the statistics, the numbers are in here in the early going, and they don't look so good for the Braves pitching staff. And I'm going to get into that, do a deep dive into the rotation a little bit later this hour and what's not going right there. Some of it is injury. Some of it is underperformance. And some of it, unfortunately, is you had one of the best pitchers on the staff walk out the door and go sign with the New York Yankees, where, I don't know if you've seen this, but I'll talk about it later on. Hate to be the bearer of bad news in this regard either. Max Fried's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he's doing it for the New York Yankees. And that just, I don't know, when you start to look at it all and what you have, and I guess in some cases what you don't have, you just can't help but feel some kind of way about what's not been going right for the Braves pitching staff. And there's been quite a few things. You thought you'd be celebrating getting Spencer Strider back to make this rotation stronger. That lasted exactly five innings before he ended up back on the injured list with a freaky, fluky hamstring injury. And of all the players to be hurt and of all the ways to be hurt, it just seemed like a cruel twist, not just for the Braves, but for Spencer Strider. Because I don't know too many players that take their conditioning more seriously than that guy does. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself because we are, again, going to talk about the rotation a lot more as we go along. But, man, you get the nickname Quadzilla. You've done some things right on leg day. So pulling a hamstring when you're playing catch, I don't think that that's on anybody's docket of possibilities. But unfortunately, that's the reality for Spencer Strider. He's now going on missing a couple of weeks, and it sounds like from Brian Snitker that there's not an exact timetable for when he's going to get back on the mound, and I don't know if you need me to tell you, but again, it's one of the many services I offer here on From the Diamond. You're going to have to build back up your arm even if you still play catch. He'd just gotten over that 90 pitch count in his final rehab start and his first start with the Braves in Toronto, back on, I believe, the 16th of April. We'll do some math. 16th of April, it's been a while. So I don't know if this means rehab assignment, rehab starts, sim games, whatever it is, but you don't have Spencer Strider, long story short, and that's not helping things out. We saw some things from Chris Sale that I think could be considered promising this week at Coors Field, but it did come at the expense of one of the worst teams in baseball history, which, unfortunately, Chris Sale was on the wrong side of a 2-1 score against the Colorado Rockies. Something else we have to talk about, but I just do feel like to kind of get back to it, that the Braves took a lot of the goodwill, the momentum that they built up over a three-week stretch, and it just kind of disintegrated in the span of about, 72 hours, let's call it. Losing to the Rockies was just the start. You would have liked that sweep. If you got that sweep, you would have gotten back to 500 at the end of April, and if I told you that was a possibility after they started 0-7, I think a lot of fans would have just said, look, I don't see it. But they were right there. They were knocking on the door of it. They were coming home, though, with momentum, having won their fourth consecutive series. But who's waiting at Truist Park for the Atlanta Braves? But I guess the National League's version of the boogeyman. It's the Los Angeles Dodgers. The three MVPs they've got at the top of their order. The very impressive pitching staff that, strangely enough, has also not been at full strength this year. I mean, the Dodgers have been through their own stuff. But they figure out ways to win games. And, in fact, they have now won all five of the head-to-head meetings between these two teams. So now the Braves are going to try to stave off some very dubious history that we're going to discuss a little bit later on in the show. But it's not like the Braves don't know how to win. But at some point, I think they have to beat good teams in order to be considered a good team themselves. You look at the expanded standings on MLB.com, there's a little column. It's all the way over to the right before you get to the next game or the current game that's going on. So it's the last column you'll find after the home and away splits. It's what is your record against 500 teams? The Braves are 4-11. Five of those losses have come courtesy of the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Braves also, obviously, were swept by the San Diego Padres, who've been a pretty good team, and they've had some trouble in a couple of other series. But long story short, you got to consistently start winning series. That's the obvious takeaway here. But how you perform against the better competition in the National League is what I think is going to start giving the Braves that confidence, that real momentum, and is probably going to have fans start coming back around to, okay, maybe this club has figured it out. And it needs to happen sooner than later. You get to the Dodgers, you got the Cincinnati Reds, then you got a date with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I think we all know there's a little bit of a difference between the Dodgers and the Reds, sure, but the Reds are a winning club. They're a club on the rise, and they're a club that I think would very much like to make the postseason this will, and I think they're kind of a dark horse. I saw some people before the season that said, look, that Reds team could win the Central, and they might. There's no runaway favorite, I don't feel like, in that division, with the Cardinals taking a big step back. The Cubs are obviously there. The Brewers clearly are a perennial contender there, but I think the door is open for the Cincinnati Reds. It's certainly a possibility. But there's a big difference between the Dodgers team they're playing this weekend and obviously the Reds team they're going to play right after that and the Pittsburgh Pirates, but you can't really overlook anybody on the schedule. I just don't feel like the Braves are in that place where even as a fan you feel comfortable enough looking at the schedule and saying, okay, that should be a series win. That should be a series win. And look, I know that they just did a lot of this right before they started playing the Dodgers, so it's not all doom and gloom, but prior to that, the sample size was a 5-13 start. That's not exactly inspiring confidence for where exactly this club can get. But as the cliches go and the baseball colloquialisms go, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. There's a lot of baseball left to be played. But as you do approach that Memorial Day marker, and I do think it's an important one, when you start to get about a third of the way through the season, you really start to get that idea of who exactly you are. And again, more importantly, who exactly maybe you aren't at that given time. But what happened over the past 3 days, or past three games, I should say, the offense went away for starters. It went from a productive and complete-looking team that could even manufacture some runs, could hit some homers, to the exact opposite. They lost 2-1 in Colorado. Then they lost 2-1 to the Dodgers. Then they got taken apart on a weird Saturday night, in which they didn't even start a game until 10:15 Eastern time. I mean, I joked about this on social media. Was the idea to make the Dodgers feel more at home by starting 3 hours later? Because they certainly did feel like they were right at home. And all jokes aside, there was nothing funny about what was going on the mound for Spencer Schwellenbach. That's got to be a concern at this point, too. He started off a house of fire, picked right up where he left off in his rookie season. But the last few, it's been a little bit tougher sledding for Schwellenbach. And I'm going to talk a lot about this a little bit later in the hour when I do that deep dive into the rotation about how some of this has to be expected. You're going to go through adversity. What is Spencer Schwellenbach going to learn about himself, and what adjustments is he going to make? Those are the questions that he should be asking himself, and I think that Braves fans are obviously going to be very curious about. But the pitching staff has been taken on water, with Spencer Strider down with a hamstring injury, Schwellenbach facing adversity. Chris Sale has kind of been, I think, mercurial might be the right word. And then after that, you're kind of looking at Grant Holmes as your other most, I think, effective starter, consistent starter. And then a couple of question marks. You got Bryce Elder. You got A.J. Smith-Shawver. What are the Braves going to do beyond that? Will they see Ronaldo Lopez again this year? I don't know if we even need to ask that question right now, because he's months away from factoring in. What would this club look like at the deadline? Could they do some buying finally for the starting rotation? Maybe that's a question to ask in a couple of months. But the Braves are going to find some answers, and they got to find some answers here in the early part of May very quickly. Coming up on this show, we will dive into this week in Braves baseball. We'll discuss the roller coaster ride that the Braves have been through over this first 5 weeks. We'll break down the good, the bad, and the ugly. Plus, we'll be taking a look at what else is happening across Major League Baseball and getting you set for Sunday Night Baseball. All of that is coming your way. But this week in Braves baseball is on deck right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In the game. Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a Sunday night. We wrap up the weekend, and the Braves are wrapping up their business with the Los Angeles Dodgers, but continue a homestand with another tough opponent rolling in on Monday. It's a four-game series against the Cincinnati Reds, a team that is very much looking to take a step forward this year. We'll get into a lot of that later on, but nonetheless, another capable opponent is going to be rolling into Truist Park. So as the Braves came home with some momentum from winning four consecutive series, but maybe a little bitter taste in their mouth from not finishing the sweep over the historically bad Colorado Rockies, which I'll get to in just a moment. The weekend against the LA Dodgers obviously was not part of what I would call a grand plan for enjoyment on this homestand to begin with. Braves, though, once again, they find themselves in a rough patch. After winning those four straight series, they had a chance for .500 at the end of April. And I know that, you know, in the grander sense, that doesn't mean altogether that much, but it certainly would have felt like at least a moral victory, maybe, if we count moral victories. I've been told in some parts we don't actually count those, but they can feel good, I guess is my point. You could have gotten to .500 at the end of April after starting out 0-7. And Brandon Gaudin, obviously, voice of the Braves for FanDuel Sports Network. So I'm working on that name, trying to get used to that one. But he showed how long it took the four teams that ever were able to start 0-7 and get back to .500 to get back up there. And I don't think any of them did it in fewer than three, maybe 4 months. And the Braves had at least a chance to flip that script pretty fast in the first full month of the season. Would have been impressive. You can live with 14-16, I guess, after you start 0-7. Who am I to quibble? It still made the Braves one of the hotter teams in the National League heading into this weekend. But all of a sudden, there's a power outage for this offense again. They played an entire series at Coors Field. And again, they won 2 out of 3. I get it. And maybe relitigating that series is the wrong move here, but I'm going to do it anyway. A whole series in Coors Field and didn't hit one home run? That had never happened before. Not that Coors Field's altogether that old. It just turned 30, but you go to Colorado, which is, what, 5,500 feet above sea level? The ball flies, even with a humidor. And the Braves, you know, whether it feels like it or not, still have quite a few power hitters. And you thought somebody somewhere might wander into one. Now, they've hit a couple homers against the Dodgers, but they have scored 5 runs in 2 games, and that ain't going to get it done against that team too many times. So let's break it down just a little bit more. From the Colorado perspective, that was Chris Sale's best start of the season, bar none. And the first couple of 3 innings of it, I was not necessarily convinced that it was going to play out the way that it did. But Chris Sale, by the numbers and by the eye test, I think showed that he had more than what it took to handle the Colorado Rockies on that day by tossing his best outing of the year and having a season high in strikeouts, certainly not a career high, but a very good outing. But the fastball was really, once again, I think, just a question mark. And it's remained this off-and-on topic of conversation. I think Chris Sale has had some bad batted ball luck this year, but I don't think it's all of that. I think that he's been a little bit more hittable this year, but not a lot, not alarmingly so. And I think he's just kind of been trying to figure it out from a control and execution standpoint. And I've pulled up some really interesting things that you're going to hear in just a little while when I really get into the Chris Sale of it all. But his Statcast this year, his advanced pitching is fascinating and not necessarily in the best way. And I'll get into that later. But I did feel like that it was a little bit of a red flag or some kind of warning light. Let's call it that. Not necessarily of an injury, but just that we're not seeing the best version of Chris Sale that we saw a year ago because of that lower velocity. But he got so many swings and misses on his slider that I think you could look at it and say, all right, well, he did whatever it took to win. I would also say, and this is not to just be a complete contrarian, but you did it against the Colorado Rockies. So I don't know if we can necessarily say all systems go, everything's fine here, situation normal. I just feel like there may be a little bit more to this and a little bit more refinement, a little bit more adjustment for Chris Sale as he goes along. But I think his next test against the Cincinnati Reds will be fascinating to watch because they most certainly are not the Colorado Rockies, a historically bad team. But this felt a lot like last season when Sale was on the mound in that 1-0 loss against the White Sox. And this outing, I think we somehow needed to see from Chris Sale most certainly. There were some good to see here. It wasn't all just a cautionary tale. And maybe velocity is not that big of an issue. Maybe it's not. The slider swings and misses were there, and there's something to be said for a, 15-year veteran to just go out there and do it. I have thrown zero pitches in Major League Baseball, so I will defer when it comes to strategizing and making those adjustments, but I've watched a lot, and it just doesn't look like the same Chris Sale that we saw a year ago. Not completely. Not yet, anyway. But Atlanta did go on to win 2 out of 3 in Colorado, unsurprisingly. That sweep, though, was really the need, because Colorado, as of beating the Braves on a Wednesday, was on pace to lose. Well, they lost 2 more games after that. So coming into Sunday's action, the Rockies were on pace to lose 133 games. And I thought the White Sox last year were taking it to a level not seen since, the first year of the Mets or the Tigers of, 2003. I mean, every, 20, maybe 30 years, you see a club that's just historically futile. And this is definitely one of those clubs. It's just coming a year after a club set a record for futility with what the White Sox did a year ago. It's just baffling. An unfun loss, for sure. And on top of that was the no home runs in 3 games at Coors Field, which was, again, a first for this club. Just a strange stat. But the offense over the 3 losses has been anemic, to say the least. The Braves, in losing to the Rockies and 2 to the Dodgers, are hitting .156 the last 3 games. With only 6 extra base hits, they've punched out 27 times. They have drawn 9 walks. But they're just flat-out bad. And that's a small sample size, but the sample size ain't good. Because they've scored, just 5 runs across those 3 games. And again, that math ain't going to work either. But I think the real struggle for a lot of fans, and I did want to get into this at least a little bit, even though I'm not sure it was the major takeaway or factor that it may have felt like, but no less notable, was the getaway day lineup. Are the Braves, in fact, in a place where they can afford to play the quote-unquote getaway day lineup? Now, if you're curious about what this is, or longtime Braves fans and longtime listeners of the show may already know, the getaway day lineup is more of a, all right, we've done what we need to do here. Let's get some at-bats for a couple of guys and, just try to get out of here with a win and get out of here healthy. But we're not necessarily going to run everybody out there. But it's curious always to me to do that kind of thing the day before you have a day off for the team. Now, that can also be a compounding effect for a guy that maybe needs a couple of days off, but I'm not sure if Alex Verdugo fits into that particular mold. But for the second time, I think in a week, Verdugo was given a day off in a series finale, and this one saw the return of Eddie Rosario. Not a typo. The Braves signed Eddie Rosario and optioned Jared Kelnick to the minor leagues, and I'll touch on Kelnick in a minute. But Eddie Rosario was basically brought in to be the 26th man. He's got a little bit of vibe that goes with the team. Certainly, we know what the history is. Teammates were happy to see him. Everyone likes Eddie, I think. But at this stage, and at this juncture, and this time around, does Eddie Rosario really have a lot to offer? I think is a fair question. But again, it wasn't brought in to be an impact move. It's just kind of meant to put a placeholder, if we're being honest, until Ronald Acuña Jr. is ready to come back. But that still could be several weeks away. We just don't know what the timeline of that is. But anyway, Eddie Rosario got that start over Alex Verdugo, and I think a lot of people kind of melted down when the lineup was posted, and I don't necessarily blame him. But I'll also, just as pragmatically as I can, point out that the Braves losing that game was on more than just Alex Verdugo not playing and Eddie Rosario playing. The Braves have several other very notable hitters, very successful hitters, some of them not even named Eli White, that didn't do much in that game. And as a result of that, the Braves lost a 2-1 contest at Coors Field. And it was a frustrating loss. But the bigger problem than the spot start for Rosario was just the overall lineup's inability to do things that it needs to do. And hit home runs in Coors Field is one of the things that the Braves should certainly be able to do. But Brian Snitker was asked a little bit about Verdugo and the fact that he did not play in that finale prior to the Dodgers series and said, based on the lack of spring training, they're just trying to be careful with Verdugo and give him a day here and there. And that in a vacuum is not a bad thing. And anybody that feels like that's a bad thing, I don't know what to tell you. Every once in a while, a guy's going to get a day off. They're not all Cal Ripken. Just that's how it works. Or Matt Olson, for that matter, who likes to play every single game and every inning of every game. Some guys are built that way. Other guys, that's not the role. That's not what you're asking them to do. But to put all that aside, a lot more went wrong than just Eddie Rosario getting 3 plate appearances or 4 plate appearances in that game, even if he did nothing. And maybe this is just a few bad games at a bad time for this Braves team, but it's troubling on the level that the Braves can't seem to win some of these games against the Dodgers, of which they have had a chance. And to go back to what I talked about a few minutes ago, they're not getting the job done against winning teams. They're 4-11 against 500 or better clubs, and they have played some tough teams early on. Getting swept in San Diego, then getting swept in L.A. and coming home 0-7 against a couple of teams that, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but they're neck and neck at the top of the National League West and among the best records in all of baseball. That's a tough assignment. And I think that the Braves had a chance to win 2, maybe 3 of those games on that trip. It just flat out didn't happen. It culminated with the Shohei Ohtani walk-off, of course, as the Dodgers finished off the 3-game sweep and the Braves came on home. And I just feel like it's kind of carried over against some of the winning clubs that the Braves just had some trouble. They look great against the Diamondbacks, which is another tough team from out in the West. And I think a team that when we're looking at playoff standings in the final, couple of months of the year, they should be right there in the middle of that mix. They're a tough club. But the Braves have got to find a way to consistently beat some of the good teams. It's not about sweeping the Minnesota Twins who are struggling, though you should. It's not about beating up on the Colorado Rockies who are bad, which you should. Beating the St. Louis Cardinals, who are a middling team this year by their seemingly own choice. Those are some of the ones you're supposed to win. So yes, I think that it's easier to accept that the outcomes of those should be more of a given, but they're not always. But you got to play better head-to-head against the teams that you're kind of measuring yourself against. And if you're not measuring yourself against that, and that's not part of the focus of the clubhouse, I understand that, I respect that, and maybe that's for the best. But when it comes to how the club is being viewed on the whole, most folks are looking at it saying, all right, well, how do they play against the best teams in baseball? And that question, unfortunately, has been answered in the negative for the most part this year. But again, they've got a lot of opportunities ahead, not so much with the Dodgers, but against some other winning teams that are certainly out there. And ways that they can start getting this turned around will be to get certain pieces and certain players plugged in and going again. We talked about Austin Riley having a slow start to the year. He turned it on. We talked about Michael Harris starting slowly. He's figured some things out, though he has cooled off a little bit in the past week. But there are a couple of other pieces, I think, that you got to see more from. I'll talk about Ozzie Albies a little bit later, but how about Matt Olson? I feel like, and this is not just because Freddie Freeman's in town, but Olson has just been under a different kind of microscope than most players in a Braves uniform. A couple of years ago, he set a franchise record for home runs, led Major League Baseball in homers and runs batted in, and it just all of a sudden felt like, all right, maybe Matt Olson has finally, you know, turned the tide and folks will just kind of accept him as he is and not get lost in the narrative of whatever else may come with him. The changing of the guard at first base, or he's not as good as the other guy, or there are flaws in his game, which certainly there can be. But I feel like this year he has been one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball. But the walks are there. The strikeouts are down. I think the defense has been solid. And Matt Olson seems to find as many times, I think, during the year as he may go cold, a hot streak where he could carry the club. And if he could time one of those up here in the month of May, that would be awfully good. Fortunate timing for the Braves, who would very much like to get that other piece that we haven't talked about. Back at the top of the order, number 13. Ronald Acuña Jr. could certainly, I think, at least add to the vibe of this team, maybe get something kickstarted, but might have to guard those expectations as well because this is a Ronald that's coming off a year away from the game. So the Braves still, a lot of questions to be answered here as we head on into the first full week of May. When we come back, we're going to take a deeper dive on the Braves starting rotation. We'll get inside the numbers on those five men and much more as we continue on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This is From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we continue here from the Kia Studios in Midtown leading up to Sunday Night Baseball. Braves and Dodgers going to close out this series, close out their season series. We'll talk a lot more about that as we go on. But as we continue this week in Braves baseball, I want to take a wider view of something I could probably call this season, or at least this season so far in Braves baseball, and some of the stories and some of the aspects that may just be plaguing this team, pulling this team down and keeping it from being able to really get on an extended run and find some consistency. And I think that's the word that we're really waiting for if you're watching the Braves on a regular basis is consistency. When can they consistently get going on offense? When can they consistently get the pitching performances they need from the rotation, from the bullpen? Overall, that seems to be the one character trait, I guess, if you want to call it, or one attribute of this team that just really hasn't materialized. And it's something that has been a hallmark of the Braves when they get going and when they are putting together the kind of seasons they have during this run. Beginning in 2018, when the Braves won the National League East for the first time, it just felt like some switches had been flipped. And yeah, you're going to have losing streaks. You're going to have to take the bad with the good from time to time. But it's just felt like the 2024 into 2025 Braves have taken it to a different level and have been searching a lot more than maybe some of those past and maybe some clubs have. And one of the ways and one of the times that you're searching the most to try to solve some of these problems is, of course, the offseason. And we've talked a lot about what didn't happen over the course of the winter. What are the Braves missing right now that might be helpful for them? And I think you really have to look at the pitching staff above and beyond anything else. And it's a strange place to be when you consider where the Braves were a year ago. This time, 1 year ago, the Braves, I think, were still considered an offense-first, figuring-it-out-in-the-pitching-side sort of a team. Now, when I say figuring it out, that's a relative or subjective term. The Braves obviously had a lot of good pieces in their rotation, in their bullpen a year ago. Some of those names are still here. Some of them are not. And we can delve into that in just a little bit and kind of parse through what exactly the Braves are missing, or maybe more to the point, who exactly the Braves are missing at this juncture of the season. But putting all that aside, I think you would still look at the Braves as a club that expected to power its way to victories, power its way to perhaps a 100-win season or a division title or postseason or season success, which has very much been a moving target for the Braves over the last 3 years. They haven't been able to replicate what they were able to do in 2021 with what felt like, in some ways, at least on paper, a lesser team. But perhaps that really brings us back to the whole point of the game is not played on paper, and you just have to let things play out. Sometimes that's for the best. 2021, it doesn't get much better than that. Sometimes it is just confoundingly, frustratingly unclear exactly what it is you're supposed to be looking at and what some of these results mean. So with all of that said, the Braves pitching staff, I think, is just somewhat of a conundrum in many ways because you had some expectations from certain players. Some of them, I think, will be able to reach those expectations. Others of them, I think it's going to be a bit more challenging. And what do I mean by that? Well, you come into this year with a reigning Cy Young Award winner in Chris Sale. Chris Sale thus far this season has had a very interesting run of it. And we talked about him a little bit earlier. The questions about velocity, the questions about being able to find the results that he did a year ago, the questions about, hey, this is a guy that's not getting any younger, is he going to be able to keep performing at keep perfect level that he has over the course of his career, which has put him on a Hall of Fame path? I think all of those are realistic questions. And I guess a lot of people would look at it as, when is regression going to come for Chris Sale? Have we seen the signs of that? And I'm not really ready to say, yes, we're seeing that in full, but we are seeing a different Chris Sale this year. There's really no two ways about that. I took a look at Sale's StatCast data just to kind of get an idea of what we're looking at year over year. And in 2024, there was what we'll say a whole lot of red on there. You would find Chris Sale routinely in the 80th, 90th percentile when it comes to just about everything, whether that is value statistics or the individual line items. And it's easy to see why Chris Sale was at the top of his game last year, won his game, won a Triple Crown, and won a Cy Young. Now when you look at 2025, some of those have taken a somewhat notable step back. Really, what Chris Sale looks like he's living on this year, and it's no surprise if you watch that Rockies start, is that slider. The slider is looking at the slider extremely good in terms of value per pitch. Fastball and off-speed, they're both toward the bottom of the league. Not just the bottom of the National League, the bottom of baseball in terms of pitch value. That's a strange thing to see year over year. The breaking ball, though, is right where it needs to be. So the slider has been able to keep Chris Sale out of more trouble. But the fastball, especially the velocity, which is down nearly a full mile per hour year over year on average, it just makes you wonder what exactly is going on thus far. And it could be the case of a pitcher who is trying to throttle things up and down and use it when it's needed and not overdo it. It could be some other work that they've done to try to figure out ways to accomplish things that maybe aren't as stressful on Chris Sale. I really don't know, honestly, and he hasn't talked about it a lot. He's been asked about the velocity, and he has shrugged that off thus far, but I still think the question remains, is Chris Sale, the current form of Chris Sale, the current version that we're seeing right now, going to be able to make the adjustments that gets him back to the level that he was a year ago? Because the StatCast, the analytics, it's not everything. The eye test also matters. The eye test against Colorado was particularly good, and I know that was his best outing of the year, and I know a lot of people wanted to see that, but I'm just saying that is not exactly a lineup in which I think you can be the best judge of, is a pitcher truly on his game? Is he quote-unquote back? Is he operating at the highest level? The Colorado Rockies are operating at the lowest level. So I think you have to at least temper the expectations coming out of that start. And a big challenge for Chris Sale will be coming up this week when he deals with the Cincinnati Reds, a winning club, a club with some serious hitters that could pose a threat to him. How is he going to look against that kind of opponent? That, I think, is going to be worth watching this week as the homestand continues. But the starting rotation is not all just on the shoulders of Chris Sale. There are some other questions that clearly have to be addressed in order for this group to get back to where it needs to get. Spencer Schwellenbach, we saw this on Saturday, gave up some of the most hard-hit contact of any start in his career. It's happened a handful of times here and there, but the Dodgers were putting more 100-plus mile-an-hour balls in play against Schwellenbach than the vast majority of teams that he's faced in his young career. He gave up 6 runs that tied a career high. He wasn't helped out by the Aaron Bummer throw to home plate, I will stipulate. But if you watched that start and you watched how the Dodgers were handling business against him, he wasn't exactly fooling anybody. And now I think he's got to really deal with that first set of adjustments after having sustained success. There are adjustments you make in this game that we saw last year as a rookie. He came up, had a couple of starts. What exactly was working for him? What wasn't? Added some pitches. He's a strike thrower. He stays around the plate an awful lot. That will allow teams to at least game plan for the fact that, hey, this guy is going to be in the zone, and then start to break it down from there. So I think the question becomes for Spencer Schwellenbach, for Rick Kranitz, for Sean Murphy or Drake Baldwin or whoever's behind the plate, how do we find ways to keep them off balance utilizing the considerable arsenal that Spencer Schwellenbach has? It's not like he's just stopped throwing pitches. It's not like, I don't think he's tipping pitches. I don't think that that's the issue. Sometimes you'll look at a really bad start and think, okay, well, maybe that other team cracked the code on him. Maybe he became too reliant on certain sequences. But you have to give credit to the other team in a number of different ways. And when they figure out a pitcher on a particular night, sometimes it just goes from bad to worse. And it seemed like it did for Spencer Schwellenbach. But after starting the year with a 0.45 ERA over his first handful of starts, the last few have been anything but that, with an ERA well up over 7, and that's pushed his season ERA to nearly 4. Now, 41 and a third innings, he's still averaging about a hit per frame. He's only walked 7 batters. He struck out 37. Fielding independent pitching is in line with what it was a year ago. The whip looks like it did a year ago. Strikeouts down slightly. Home run balls and walks right about the same. Hits up slightly. That can make a pretty big difference. But how about these last 4 starts for Schwellenbach? There's one good one mixed in here, one decent one, and a couple of clunkers. The first bad one came on the 15th of April against the Blue Jays. 6 earnings over 4 2/3 innings. Only struck out 3 there. And then 6 earned runs on 8 hits. 3 2/3 innings against the Dodgers. It just didn't look like the same guy as it was over the first few starts where, again, he was absolutely dealing and looked like he'd picked up where he was a year ago. But making the adjustments and being able to pitch through adversity and being able to overcome when perhaps the rest of the league has started to at least solve some of the riddle, that is the mark of a true pro. And I think Spencer Schwellenbach is up to that challenge. How quickly can he do it is a question that needs to be answered because I think it'll be to the great benefit of this Braves club that needs him to be clicking right now. You look outside of that. You got Chris Sale, you got Spencer Schwellenbach, and then the questions begin for Atlanta. But I will say this. It's worth pointing out, just based on what we saw on Friday night in the opener against LA, Grant Holmes has really been kind of a glue guy for this rotation. Not every start has been an absolute gem. He had a bad one in Arizona, but for the most part, as the Braves have needed to have some answers in the middle to back end of the rotation, Grant Holmes has been able to supply some quality innings, and the Braves are going to need him to continue to do that for the foreseeable future. How they solve this rotation beyond Grant Holmes is something I think a lot of people are interested to see. You would like for a big part of the equation to be Spencer Strider, a pitcher that the Braves were hoping to already have back in rotation every fifth day at this point. They got one start out of him in Toronto, and then a freak hamstring injury has him on the sidelines. And Strider, for right now, he is throwing, but he's not off a mound yet. He's already been on the injured list for what, going on a couple of weeks? It doesn't look like he's going to be jumping off immediately and getting a start against the Reds. I guess we'll see how things play out over the first week or two here in the month of May. But some questions about when he'll be back, even with a mild hamstring strain, which this is, it couldn't come at a worse time for the Braves. And that seems to be when these injuries have been showing up a lot of times over this past couple of years. But putting that aside, the Braves need Spencer Strider back as quickly as they can get him. And they've still got questions beyond that, even if you have Chris Sale and Spencer Schwellenbach and Spencer Strider and Grant Holmes as that 4. What's happening at 5? Bryce Elder. I think credit where it's due, the last couple of outings, the one against St. Louis, the one against Colorado, it may not necessarily always look as good as you'd like it to look, but you can't argue with the numbers, and it's not like the Braves are sitting on a host of options ready to jump up from the minor leagues and take his spot. There really aren't a lot of guys that I think are major league ready. The next guy in line to make starts, and a guy who will be in this rotation, I think, for the foreseeable future at the very least, is A.J. Smith-Shawver, who also pitched well against Colorado. He did leave that start after taking the liner off the arm, but from all reports, he seems to be good to go and in line to start the series opener against the Cincinnati Reds on Monday at Truist Park. A.J. Smith-Shawver, I felt like just coming into this year, could be a major factor in the Braves' rotation. When we talk about this kid, and I've done this a lot, whether it's on social media or on this show, he was so far ahead of schedule when the Braves brought him up in 2023. It was surprising to see that because, remember, he started to get these opportunities to start right around the time that the Braves were making their long-awaited decision on Michael Soroka, who has not been a factor in this rotation for quite some time and is now pitching for the Washington Nationals, his third team in the last 3 years. Putting that aside, Smith-Shawver's opportunity has been there several different times. He's pitched in the postseason twice. He was given the Game 1 start against the San Diego Padres when Chris Sale went down in the wild card series last year. So this is obviously somebody that the Braves believe in. This is someone that I feel like can be a contributor, even if he is not a fully developed, multiple-pitch guy that has all of the prerequisites already checked off as he gets this opportunity. I think there's got to be some on-the-job training. And I think it's better for A.J. Smith-Shawver to get that training at the big league level every fifth day without wondering where his next start is going to be. And that may be a simplified view of it. There are a lot of different things that go into developing young players and young arms and trying to turn them from prospects into everyday contributors and or stars. But A.J. Smith-Shawver definitely has the potential, and the Braves right now, in terms of options, those aren't plentiful. So I think you take a potential guy and you ride him. You give him that chance and see if he can impress you, because you need somebody to step up. And he does seem to have the qualities from a pitching standpoint that could lend itself to some success, which the Braves most desperately need right now from the starting rotation, which has been not what was advertised at the start of the year. To close out this discussion, just looking at the 30,000-foot view of what the Braves have in rotation, they are the 27th best rotation in baseball based on wins above replacement. In terms of good old-fashioned ERA, the Braves currently rank 26th in Major League Baseball in rotation ERA at 4.54. Now, it could improve with Chris Sale. It could improve with Spencer Strider returning. It could improve with Spencer Schwellenbach figuring out this rough patch. And it could improve with other guys stepping up and contributing. Not having Reynaldo Lopez certainly hurts this group, but they've got to sort that out over the next few months. There are some questions that the Braves are going to have to answer if they want to turn into that consistent winning club. We've talked a lot about pitching, but not having the consistency, I think, has been the thing that has plagued this club the most. They've got to find that consistency, and they've got to find it sooner than later. So that's some thoughts on the Braves pitching staff. A lot more to discuss, of course, as we continue on From the Diamond. But when we come back, we are going to take a look at what else is happening around Major League Baseball and take our trip around the big leagues. That comes your way next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in. This is hour two of From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios, and we are going to take our trip around the big leagues and size up some of the other stories and happenings from across the rest of Major League Baseball that have been at least on the radar this week. Some things that caught my interest and some things I thought you might want to be made aware of, though this first story may not actually qualify as one of those, because this obviously is an Atlanta area, Atlanta Braves focused, Atlanta centric show for the majority of it, except when I do venture out. And unfortunately, I had to venture out to the Bronx to find this first story. It is about Max Fried. You may be familiar with him because the former Braves ace is making a big-time impression with his new team. So I'm not trying to throw salt in the wound here or anything like that, but it has to feel a little bit close to it, because some people, I think that the way that they grieve is out of sight, out of mind. He is gone. He is no longer part of this team. We don't have to talk about him. But then there are others, and I don't think this is wrong either way, or if you fall somewhere in between on the spectrum of grief, I totally understand. They just see it and they can't help but think, what if he was still here? And that, again, you can fall anywhere in between those two as well. But regardless of how you feel about it, Max Fried is making a case as the Yankees MVP in the early going, according to at least one New York scribe. And look, the New York scribes write a lot of things over the course of the season. Not all of them are complimentary, but Joel Sherman of The Post and MLB Network recently opined that Fried may in fact be the most valuable Yankee over the first 5 weeks. And how in the world could he say that? Well, this is what Joel had to say. The Yanks have been down three starting pitchers all year. Their bullpen needs protection, and Fried is leading Major League Baseball in innings pitched, the American League in ERA, and the Yankees are 7-0 when Fried starts, 12-14 when he does not. So when you start to get into the argument of most valuable players, and I realize that pitchers, it's probably a steeper hill to climb to win an MVP, but your overall value to your club, if you win every time you take the ball, if your team wins every time you take the ball, it's a pretty good ratio. And that's what makes Fried, I think, so valuable to New York right now, is that they had so many other questions and so much chaos in rotation. They needed somebody to go out there and, as the kids say, just shove. And that's what Max Fried has been doing here. Now, Aaron Judge, I think, is the MVP of the galaxy, is what Sherman said. But Fried, the most valuable Yankee, question mark. There's a case to be made, because, again, this is a subjective debate. Because how do you say this particular player is more valuable to the Yankees than Judge, who is playing at a level beyond, I think, even he has shown before? And that's a pretty high bar. But the value for Fried is certainly there. And remember, he signed that 8-year, $218 million free agent contract with the Yankees in December. And it appears to be better money spent for the Yankees based on need than bringing back Juan Soto would have been, at least in the early returns. Because Juan Soto, last I checked, cannot pitch. He also is not off to the hottest start with the Mets. But putting that aside, Max Fried has been everything that the Yankees could have asked for and then some thus far in his young career. First of 8 years in the Bronx. Off to a good start for him. Meanwhile, you know I love to discuss umpiring and critique umpiring, especially on social media, because let's face it, it's pretty easy to do. But every once in a while, I think there's some self-awareness that goes on. And Bill Miller, the veteran umpire, definitely showed some of that. I saw this on Awful Announcing this week. He missed a close call at home plate during the Friday game between the Twins and the Red Sox as Jaron Duran came around the bases and sliding in. And thanks to the microphone for the replay that is first heard through the stadium and on the broadcast, and I guess remained hot on the broadcast side, and thankfully not the stadium, because, man, that probably would have been a look you don't want, even though what you're about to hear is probably not a look or a sound that anybody wants. But the play in question, bottom of the eighth inning on Friday, Jaron Duran comes around from first base on a Rafael Devers gapper out to right center. Duran came sliding in, appeared to beat the tag of Ryan Jeffers, the Twins catcher. Twins challenged the play, and it showed that Jeffers had applied the tag just before Duran touched the plate. So I'm going to let Bill Miller take it from here. You'll hear the highlight. You'll hear a little bit of the replay, and then you'll hear the Bill Miller announcement, and then you'll hear something that, quite frankly, probably shouldn't have been heard on the broadcast. Here's Bill Miller and everything from Nesson. Take a listen.
Duran hitting second, Duran hitting third. Here he comes, trying to score. Here's the throw. He dives. He's safe.
See that tag right there with the
hand. After review, the call to the field is overturned. The runner is out. Minnesota retains.
So it is 6-1 as the call is overturned. Ball earned at the end of eight. Red Sox ahead 6-1. 6-1.
Saw that too. Damn it.
Yeah, so there were a few extra beeps there. I'm not sure technologically what may be happening on over here, but if you heard the raw audio, which again is available on Awful Announcing, Bill Miller, he took himself to task because he made the initial call and kind of realized, oh, you know, I messed that up. I feel like my body reacted from muscle memory, but my brain, my eyes saw something different. And hey, look, this is what the replay system is for, right? It's to take a look at things, give it the opportunity to get the call correct. I'm not going to sit here and stand for MLB's replay system. I think in large part it can be unreliable at best, atrocious at worst, but that's a different show for a different time. It does appear, though, that perhaps, possibly, they got one right here, and Bill Miller knew it. So the Nesson broadcast went to commercial. Fans at Fenway obviously were booing that, but hearing Miller on the way out basically saying, hey, look, I saw it and I messed up, and some profanities and whatnot. At least it was some version of accountability, which I think a lot of people have just been asking. Is there some accountability for Major League Baseball umpires? I think in some cases there certainly is. And as I've heard and as I will say, you know, these folks are humans too, and they certainly make some mistakes. Now, as far as human interest stories go in Major League Baseball, one that, quite frankly, is the scariest that you can see and the kind of thing that you've never want to encounter is what happened in Pittsburgh. A man fell from the top of a 21-foot-high wall onto the warning track during the Pirates and Cubs game on Wednesday at PNC Park. There's a GoFundMe page that's been set up for Kevin Markwood. That's a 20-year-old who slipped off the railing and onto the field in the seventh inning of the Pirates game against the Cubs. But an update was shared on Saturday that Markwood, who again fell from 21 feet, is improving. Jennifer Phillips is the organizer of the fundraiser. Markwood has made significant progress since being admitted to the trauma center at Allegheny General Hospital on Wednesday night, and he was in critical condition. Again, and I'll discuss some of these because, as fans in the city know, we've had some similar incidents that happened at Turner Field some years ago, and there's some of those I will not forget anytime soon just as somebody covering baseball. But here's Pirates manager Derek Shelton talking a little bit about what the scene was like on Wednesday when Markwood fell from that right field wall.
Shelty, how disturbing is it to have something like that happen during a game?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, even though it's, you know, 350 feet of wire or whatever it is, I mean, the fact of how it went down and then, you know, laying motionless, like while the play's going on. I mean, Craig saw it, I saw it, we both got out there. I don't think the umpire saw it, unfortunately, because of the way the ball kicked, you know, but just... It's extremely unfortunate. I mean, that's an understatement.
Is there anything that can be shared from, you know, the people who are out there?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't talk to anybody that was out there. I'm sure that that we put out a statement or will put out a statement when we have more information.
And obviously the Pirates have discussed it. Major League Baseball fans, I think, coast to coast have obviously taken an interest in this story and have to be thrilled to see that, you know, the progress that Mark Wood has made, everything he's been through since Wednesday, this according to, again, Jennifer Phillips, who's running this GoFundMe for him, has been miraculous, nothing short of miraculous. He still has a long road ahead of him, but today brought a moment of hope to all those who've been holding on to it. He can speak now and is encouraging others to support him during his next phase of the recovery. So as of Saturday evening, that GoFundMe, if you're curious, had raised nearly $30,000. So for a good cause and hopefully a speedy recovery for Kevin Markwood and what was truly a scary, scary incident. Not the kind of thing you expect to see when you go to a ballpark. And at Turner Field, there were several incidents of that over the years. And you hate to see one, let alone several. I was there for pretty much all three of them, the last of which against the New York Yankees, I believe, in 2016. I'd have to go back and check the date, though. But the string of events from that gentleman that fell from the upper deck and hit the guide wire on the way down, I mean, it's about as scary and surreal as it could possibly get. So, you know, when you go to a ballpark, you expect to be able to get away from the things that we can encounter in life. And obviously, the fewer of these incidents, clearly, the better moving forward. And thankfully, for this gentleman, it seems like he may be on the road to recovery, and that is truly, truly great to hear. Meanwhile, back on the field, or well, unfortunately, off the field, Mike Trout, the superstar outfielder for the Los Angeles Angels, finds himself once again in a familiar place, and that would be the injured list after he had to leave Wednesday's loss to the Mariners after he jammed his right knee, which is the one that has been surgically repaired, on the run to first base. It happened in the third inning. He was placed on the 10-day IL before the Friday game against the Tigers. Here is Trout talking about what exactly happened and how he is feeling after the incident on Wednesday.
I feel a lot better. Yesterday I was pretty sore, but today a lot better. I'm in lunch for the bag and you know, talking to the doctors. Obviously had two meniscuses, you know, shaved down. I just hit it perfectly on the bag and both bones hit each other and, you know, bruise both of them. So,
yeah, no thanks on that one. It's the left knee for Trout that he had had those surgeries on, a bone bruise enough to land him on the IL. Obviously, this has been an ongoing issue for Trout, who has won an MVP award three times. You could make a case. He could probably have five, if not six, of those things on his trophy case or in his trophy case as well. But hitting just 179 this year, though he does have nine homers in 29 games, those nine homers, fourth most in Major League Baseball. But yet another injury scare for one of the most talented players of this generation. He has played 100 games just once in the previous 4 years, and it looks like 2025 could be a very steep hill to climb for Trout as well when it comes to reaching the 100-game plateau. But hopefully a short stay for him on the injured list, and you just can't help but think. I mean, when you have those what-if players, sometimes it's guys that shine brightly for a very short amount of time. Other times it's guys that maybe they gave you a couple of years and – and he just kind of wondered, what if they'd stayed healthy? Then you have guys like Trout and like Ken Griffey Jr., who had incredible careers, but maybe there was another level for him if they were able to stay healthy and play for longer. And you hate to have to say that about somebody who seemed like, and who is, and people have asked me, I mean, is Mike Trout a Hall of Famer? I feel like it's a ridiculous question. He could never play another game, and he's done enough to be a Hall of Famer. The question is, Mike Trout on his road to being an all-time great, seeing that derailed by injuries, that's the kind of thing that you absolutely hate to see. But hopefully, again, a short stay for him on the injured list. Take a quick look at the standings and then wrap this thing up in the American League. At the New York Yankees holding the lead over the Boston Red Sox for first place in the American League East. But top to bottom, fewer than six games between first place and last place there. So it looks like even though the Orioles have struggled mightily, no one has run away with that division yet. But you talk about struggling mightily. The Orioles gave up seven home runs to the Royals today. That's a franchise record for the Royals in one single game. And Kansas City had hit 18 homers in their first 33 games this year and have now hit 10 in the last 2 days. So they're making up for lost time are the Royals, but they are in the middle of the central race where the Tigers are on top, Guardians in second place, Royals sitting in third, and then some separation between the Twins, obviously, and the White Sox. In the American League West, it's the Seattle Mariners with a two-game lead over the Athletics, one of the exciting and maybe surprising teams. Some young talent there making a run this year. That would certainly be something considering everything that's gone on with that team. Astros just a half game back of that, then the Rangers and the Angels in the standings there. In the East, it's the Mets, the Phillies, and the Nationals and Braves in a virtual tie for third place there. Marlins bringing up the rear. The Central has the Cubs with a 2.5 game lead over the Cincinnati Reds, who are still in action against the Washington Nationals right now. Then you find the Brewers, Cardinals, and Pirates. And it's the Dodgers with a 1-game lead over the Padres heading into Sunday night. And then the San Francisco Giants 2.5 back. Arizona Diamondbacks 5.5 back and 17 games out of first place. That's where you'll find the Colorado Rockies, who've been having some troubles this year. We've documented those, and we can stick a pin in the Colorado Rockies talk for now. When we come back, though, we'll turn our attention back to what's going on with the Atlanta Braves, who will wrap up their weekend series with the Dodgers and welcome the Reds to town. A few more big stories from the week that was, and moving forward, we'll discuss them here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. As we continue on in Hour 2, we turn our attention back to what's going on with the Atlanta Braves, who are in the midst of a homestand that they were hoping would be an extension of some good feelings that were generated from four consecutive series wins. But unfortunately for Atlanta, the Los Angeles Dodgers continued to be their kryptonite, and they lost a series with a frustrating one-run loss in the opener. And then whatever in the world Saturday was. Because Saturday, 7 o'clock hour came, and the 7 o'clock hour went, and the Braves and Dodgers began in a rain delay that pushed them all the way to, 10:15 Eastern time before the game got started. And when it did, the events of that game were forgettable from the Atlanta perspective. Spencer Schwellenbach was knocked around. Atlanta's offense was not able to answer the constant barrage of the Dodgers lineup in that defeat, and they find themselves with their backs against the wall on Sunday, with a little bit of what I will call somewhat dubious history, perhaps. I'll get into that a little bit later in this show, but the Braves very much do not want to be on this side of history if they're unable to beat the Dodgers tonight. So stick around. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. There are, of course, though, a few more things that we need to cover here, and one of them is what exactly is going on with Ozzie Albies this season. And it's a question that I've heard quite a bit, but I have yet to really determine what the answer is for the Atlanta second baseman, who is, as of Saturday's action, hitting .248 with 5 homers and 5 steals in 139 plate appearances, an OPS just under 700. And keep in mind, last year, injuries, the broken wrist, obviously the broken toe, that pushed him to about a 700 OPS. So this has been going on for a while, pushing just over 550 plate appearances. It just hasn't looked or felt like the Ozzie Albies that Braves fans might have been accustomed to seeing prior to that. It hasn't been all bad, but there certainly have not been those moments that Ozzie has, I think, endeared himself to Braves country with by coming through with big clutch hits. Lots of those over the course of his career. But this year, he's been one of the guys who has not been able to come through the level that the Braves need him to. But he's not the only one. I want to point that out. But really what has become concerning, I think, with Albies more than anything is when you start to look at his StatCast page and look, some players, you look at the Matt Olson, for example, you look at that and you're like, oh, he's in the 90th plus percentile in all of these different categories. Clearly, he must be doing some things right at the plate. With Ozzie, it's a little bit more like you kind of have to have a Rosetta Stone to determine exactly, all right, well, how does this indicator translate itself to actual results, or how should it translate to actual results? Because Ozzie has never been that guy that's leading the league in hard hit percentage or average exit velocity, any of those kinds of things. He's been more been about what you see on the stat line and not necessarily how it gets there for him. But this year, I think we've seen a lot more pop flies. I think we've seen a lot more soft contact, and that has been, you know, troubling to say the least. And as you look at his StatCast page this year, and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the show with about Chris Sale, like you want to see all that red, all those red lines that lead you to know exactly who this player is and how he's doing things. With Ozzie, it's the opposite. Everything is across to the left and sitting in blue. Among those, 7th percentile in average exit velocity, 3rd in hard hit, and 8th in bat speed. Look, you don't have to be a genius to know, and you don't need StatCast to tell you. You swing the bat hard, you hit the ball hard. You connect at the right angle, the ball goes very far. All of those kinds of things. That's pretty much what this is pointing out, is the fact that that's just not happening for him. And while he has never been, again, a StatCast darling, the big problem that I see with this, above and beyond some of the other troubling numbers is the launch angle for him has been far off of what it's needed to be for him. Because even though he has been kind of a looping swing where he will go down and lift the ball, particularly from the lower quadrant of the strike zone, that just hasn't been happening the way that it has in past years here in 2025. You go back and look at 2023, which is the year that Ozzie hit 33 home runs, drove in 100 runs. His launch angle sweet spot was among the best in the game, 83rd percentile. I promise I'm going to stop talking about percentiles here in a moment. But you kind of get lost in this stuff because you're just trying to figure out, all right, how does a player like Ozzie Albies, a player who is 28 years old, so the prime of his career, that's not arguable. That just is where most guys are. Most players don't necessarily come up at 20 and become an all-star in short order the way that Ozzie did, but I digress. How exactly has he gotten where he is now, and how can he get this whole thing turned around, I think, is more so the question. Can he make some adjustments? Because, again, it's not about the hard hit rate and the exit velocity for him, though it certainly would help. But the launch angle, that's the adjustment, I think, that once Ozzie is able to do so, you could start seeing some numbers. It may never change the free swinging ways, the ultra aggressive approach, especially with runners on base and with pitchers on the ropes. Ozzie oftentimes is looking to capitalize immediately. That part of his game may not change. But some of these things, I feel like there could be an adjustment that could really unlock something that gets him closer to the player that you expect him to be rather than the player that we've been seeing here in 2025 and for much of 24, though I will stipulate the injuries certainly have to be a factor in that. Now, speaking of hitters who've gone through it this year, Jared Kelnick certainly qualifies. The rough start saw him optioned to AAA when Eddie Rosario was re-signed by the club a week ago. Jared Kelnick hit 167 with a 531 OPS and lost his playing time, ultimately the everyday job, to Eli White, who's been a great story, a surprise story that we'll talk about more in a moment. But you look at what Kelnick has been able to do down in the minors. He is picking up some base hits. He is drawing some walks. And he just needs to go down there and play every day at this point. Yeah, I talked about that when Drake Baldwin stayed up. I feel like you had to kind of hold on to him because you weren't sure, you know, what version of Sean Murphy you were going to get back. And maybe that conversation has changed now that we've seen that Murphy's power is there and that he can be a productive hitter, but you still need somebody to help spell him a time or two at least every week. Is that beneficial to Baldwin? I don't know. But for Kelnick, he wasn't going to figure out what was wrong this year or unlock what he needs to unlock to find his potential, which he very much believes is still in there. And which I do think is still there, he's got to go find it and do the work for it. And I think that has to happen on an everyday basis in the minor leagues, and that is where Jared Kelnick finds himself in no small part to the emergence of Eli White. If you had given me a list of the opening day Braves players and said, okay, what are you expecting from each of these guys? I don't know that I would have had a great answer for Eli White. I would have said, okay, well, he's a useful defensive replacement. You can utilize him in the outfield. He could play the infield in a pinch if you need him to. And, you know, not to launch into a whole other thing, but I don't see him as becoming the Braves starting second baseman when Ronald Acuna Jr. comes back. I don't see that as something that they're going to keep on a list of possibilities there. But I digress. He has earned this playing time. But back on opening day, I would have just thought, yeah, he's a defensive replacement, somebody who can come in and run. He's got elite speed. He's a very good defender. Useful guy to have. 25th, 26th man on the roster, however you want to determine it. He has become, over the last 10 days, way more than that. He's batting .343 since starting his first game 9 games ago. 8 extra base hits, 2 homers, 8 runs knocked in, 10 runs scored over those 9 games. And this is a classic example of some things you just can't predict in baseball or in life, for that matter. But you got to ride the hot hand. And the Braves lineup has definitely needed that injection that Eli White has been able to as far as the production is concerned. They had to have it from somewhere. I just don't think Eli White was the expected source of that power. But you'll take what you can get from everybody, and it takes 26-plus to figure this whole thing out, and the Braves are getting some good stuff from Eli White. The Braves, meanwhile, could be weeks away still from Ronald Acuna Jr. getting back and rejoining this club. Now, the Odyssey has taken him to spring training where he didn't play any games, to extended spring training where he's been getting a lot of at-bats and doing some baseball activities, back out to Los Angeles to get his knee checked off and basically signed off on to begin more advanced and more stringent running. And that's where he finds himself right now, but still no timetable for a rehab assignment. I'd heard some rumblings that perhaps this week would be the week for that, but it doesn't seem like that is the case anymore. So is he a week away from it? Is he 2 weeks away? We don't know. If he's 2 weeks away, I still think he's going to need a couple of more weeks in the minor leagues, which puts his return back to some point in maybe early June. And again, the Braves have been very careful to not put a timetable on it, but he just kind of did the math and thought, okay, April, be completely cautious, figure that out. But mid-May, I think a lot of folks, maybe even Ronald Acuña Jr. himself, were expecting to be back out there on the field and playing some games here. But who will Acuña be when he returns? I mentioned this briefly earlier, but I think it's a question worth asking just based on what we saw in 2022. My expectation is he's going to be a player who can change the dynamic of the Braves lineup, but is my expectation that he's going to walk in and be the 2023 MVP version of Ronald Acuña Jr.? I don't think that it can be. I don't think that that's a fair expectation to have. And secondly, we saw him in 2024, even when he was still at a high degree of his powers, struggle over the first couple of months before succumbing to that ACL tear in Pittsburgh the last week of May. So he's closing in on, well, just over 11 months since he had the injury. Can he be back within about a year of this? It seems like that's still a pretty realistic timetable, but the sooner he gets out on that rehab assignment, the sooner we will know. But you stack Acuña and Spencer Strider together, I think, and there's this idea for Braves fans most certainly, and I'm sure for the club, of when they get back and when this team is at full strength, they may just be a much improved club. But I think, again, you've got to guard those expectations, and Strider's immediate return to the IL kind of underscores that. You just can't predict what might happen even when they do get back. And say you do get Strider and Acuña back, you got to keep the rest of this club healthy and rolling along and productive. And they just haven't been able to line up all those dominoes and get them to fall the right way over the past calendar year plus. Because I think through April last year, you were still looking at that Braves offense and thinking that was going to be the driving force of this club. And then that switch got flipped and it was pitching that carried the Braves into the playoffs a year ago. Now it feels like you're kind of in this weird, nebulous, in-between state where your hitting is pretty good, except when it's not, and your pitching leaves a lot to be desired because your bullpen has been a little bit questionable, your closer has been questionable, your rotation has not really been able to congeal and come together. Spencer Schwellenbach is showing that, hey, anybody, no matter how talented you are as a young player, is going to have to go through it. And even Chris Sale has not looked like the Cy Young version of Chris Sale, and you got Spencer Strider back for five innings before he ended up back on the injured list. And as I talked about a lot earlier in the show, you're at a place where, is there a case to be made that Grant Holmes is perhaps the Braves' most consistent starting pitcher, at least the guy who's taking the ball every fifth day and you know is going to be out there? Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I don't think that's going to be the case for six or seven solid months, but you're going to take all that you can get from whoever you can get it from. And A.J. Smith-Shawver is another guy that you're going to need a little bit of something from. Maybe you'll see it on Monday, where he is slated to get back on the mound against the Cincinnati Reds. And he, Bryce Elder, whoever else, as they patch this rotation together with Strider out, is the kind of math that the Braves are looking at right now, or the riddle that they're trying to solve very much so. When we come back, we will take a deeper look at what's going on Sunday night as the Braves and Dodgers get ready to close out their series on Sunday Night Baseball. We will preview that and put a wrap on this edition of From the Diamond. It comes your way next on 92.9 The Game. This is From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. We'll be back shortly.